Vicky Garvin, who is an activist and was in Ghana and worked with Malcolm in Ghana. She's going to be sharing some of that experience with us this afternoon. We're very, very fortunate indeed. And it's my pleasure now to call Vicky Garvin.
Thank you. Let me say at the outset that I'm not a scholar and I'm not a historian, no theoretician either. Although I did live in and work in West Africa, Nigeria, and then in Ghana for 4 years, and I've traveled to many, many other countries since then. Most of what I do know about Africa, I learned through the writings and the lectures of many of the people who are appearing on this program, so I'm indebted to them. However, I have been a student of economics for a while, so I know something about capitalism, socialism, colonialism, neocolonialism, and certainly imperialism. In fact, one of the reasons I wanted to go to Africa was to see what neocolonialism was actually like. I later had an opportunity to live for 6 years in China, and so I saw something of what socialism is like. I know what capitalism is like. I was born into that. I have to tell you, too, that I'm not a close associate of Malcolm's. I was not throughout his life involved with his activities. And so I was a little hesitant to appear on this program and said, now, what is there for me to add when we have all of these scholars and all of these, you know, people with expertise and credentials? But then I thought, well, you don't have to know a person throughout his lifetime in order to come to some judgment or evaluation of his role. And so instead of sitting in the audience with you, I'm here at this podium, and I do hope I will have something to add. Now first, I would like to comment briefly on what I learned about Malcolm's thinking and his leadership as a nationalist freedom fighter against U.S. racism. Then, as an ardent advocate of Pan-Africanism. And subsequently, as an effective protagonist of internationalism, linking the struggles of all oppressed and exploited people of color for freedom, justice, human rights, and self-determination. I first met Malcolm when he was a very popular bartender at Small's Paradise in Harlem. He was then known as Detroit Red, and in the language of the time, as a hip cat. I saw him many times. I don't think I was just sitting at the bar then. But I used to have my lunch and my dinners there very often because I worked right in the immediate neighborhood. And because the dining room chairs were so close to the bar, I could often overhear a lot of the conversations that he had with his customers. So I got some feel of what this Detroit Red was really like then. Now later, after he became a leader in the Nation of Islam, I was very often in the crowd when he spoke from a ladder on the street corners in Harlem. I had some problems with some of the things I heard that the Nation of Islam had, you know, had about the woman question. But I was greatly impressed with this charismatic, articulate man when he told it like it is in down-to-earth language. Malcolm not only vigorously exposed and castigated the racist U.S. system and its white devils, he also didn't bite his tongue in criticizing us for our weaknesses and shortcomings, such as confusion about our identity, the ignorance of our own heritage, and sometimes passivity. Malcolm underscored the need for self-reliance, self-help, militancy, and harnessing our political strength to change the status quo. He lashed out at opportunists, apologists, token integrationists, and Oreos. I know you know what Oreos are. Now, some of this is, you know, pretty hard to swallow, because there were among us spokesmen who were armchair generals and ivory tower theoreticians, removed from the daily persecution of the masses of our people. But it was in Ghana that I met Malcolm X again. He had a new world outlook and orientation by then. And he had been freed from some, if not most, of the dogmatic aspects and limitations of his religion and the non-involvement of the Nation of Islam as a matter of principle in politics. So by the time I saw him again in Africa, he was then able to take more initiative and to pursue an activist role in line with his enlarged goals. His mission was to promote unity of the majority of the so-called third world. I hesitate to use the word third world because, you know, psychologically, when you listen, you know, first is always important, and the second one there, and then the third world. People of color are and have been first world. We've been first world in terms of civilization. So I don't like the term third world, although I see it often, and it's more easily understood. Third world, you know, they're underdeveloped, the ignorant, the backward, people who had to be led, who need the civilization. I don't buy that. Now, his main instrument in coming to Africa was through a petition to the United Nations charging genocide against 23 million black Americans. Now, in some respects, Malcolm was following the footsteps of William Patterson of the Civil Rights Congress and other black notables who also succeeded in presenting to the United Nations a similar petition charging genocide. Of course, we know that was way back in 1951, I think. But by then, as you know, third world, quotes, representatives were not present at the United Nations. And so the, quotes, first world people paid that petition no mind. But it didn't mean that the issue was dead, because Malcolm revived it and went around the third world to promote its acceptance and endorsement. Malcolm was a continuum of several other African-American freedom fighters, dating from Frederick Douglass, who traveled abroad during